Today on a spine-chilling episode of Real Ghost Stories Online, when a child comes to a parent with tales of things that go bump in the night, a natural reaction is to assure the youth that it's all their imagination and there's nothing to worry about. But what happens when these experiences go from being tall tales to a nightmarish reality that truly gives every soul in the house something to worry about? That story and many more on today's frightening episode of Real Ghost Stories Online.
Welcome to Real Ghost Stories Online. Call in your real ghost story now at 855-853-4802 or write in at realghoststoriesonline.com. You're about to enter the world of the unknown and quite possibly the undead. This is Real Ghost Stories Online.
That indeed it is, 855-853-4802. Our phone number at Real Ghost Stories Online to share your real ghost stories with us. Of course, if you like the show, become an extra podcast person. That's an EPP. Sign up to be an EPP at ghostpodcast.com or patreon.com/realghoststories. There you get access to all of our episodes, all of them commercial free. World's largest audio archive of ghost stories, the new EPP bonus episodes every week and more. It's all there over at ghostpodcast.com or patreon.com/realghoststories. Tony and Todd with you on today's episode of the program. What's going on?
I wanted to talk briefly about something I think a lot of your listeners probably understand, and that is like the life of an empath. Because I think a lot of people who have experiences with hauntings and spirits and stuff like that, I think that they're probably open, they're probably empathic, all that kind of stuff. Two quick instances of my life. So I've always been an introvert, but certainly in the last years of my life, I'm even more so than ever before, like almost painfully introverted again. The pandemic has made me so, well, like, I don't need to go out of my house ever, So last night, I kind of got dragged out to dinner with some family, and it was a lovely time, but I'm sitting there enjoying myself, trying to stay close on around me. And what happens, but an elderly woman between the age of, let's say, 65 and 72 has to stop on her way out to tell me that my haircut is similar to something that they wore in the 50s. So she's coming on to me in the restaurant and not only like talking to me, but she's like really close to me. So like I could have like French kissed her if I wanted to, I think. So, and it was a supper club. So, you know, the kind of clientele I'm talking
about. Yes.
So that's number one. And so I said, this is why I don't ever want to go out in public. Today I've got to go out. I had to go out because I had a doctor's appointment and physical therapy from the surgery I had several weeks ago. And, in between the doctor's appointment and the surgery, there was enough time to stop at the local Mickey D's and have some coffee with my friend who was driving me around. And I walk in and I'm not even in the door. And this guy walks up to me and he's like, what kind of surgery did you have? And I'm like, oh, Jesus, you know? So I explain and he's like, oh, I had the same thing in November. I fell and I ripped my blah, 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 and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
So he basically just wanted to let me know that it does get better, you know? And I, as I appreciate the vote of confidence, which I kind of needed at the moment, I didn't want to talk to him. And
sure.
The conversation went on for the entire time I was there.
No sense of time or space in Wisconsin when it comes to people kind of just BSing with each other.
And he's like, the worst part of it was, and you'll understand this, is trying to take a poop after you have the surgery you have to keep your legs straight. And he was right, 100%. I completely understood what he was talking about.
Yeah.
I didn't want to talk about it while I was having my McMuffin, you know? Like, can people just leave me the hell alone?
I think that's everything to do with being an empath, but also being in Wisconsin on top of that, where people just, they talk like that, you know? They start going and they don't know when to stop. And there's really no filter on most, where it's just like, let's talk about this, let's talk about that. That's one of those things up there.
I've concluded that I need to get the hell out of the state. I was thinking about refinancing the house, but I think I'm just better off selling the damn thing and moving someplace where people hate other people. Yeah. That's where I've got to go.
It's almost kind of funny because you'd fit in well, you know, because you're just going to keep to yourself and nobody's going to sit there and have a conversation at the it's like a blessing or a curse. Like someone would look at that and go, that'd be wonderful. I wish that's what it was like where I was at. But I'm with you. I like... Everybody just kind of keeps to themselves. Nobody has to be mean or anything like that.
No,
but just,
no.
Just, you know, everybody doesn't need to, you know, chat it up, you know, just because you're there. But yeah,
I think a blessing can be a curse. I call it a blurse and it works out perfectly.
Yeah, I agree. 855-853-4802 is our phone number here at Real Ghost Stories Online to share your real ghost stories with us. Let's go to our first story of the day. It says, hello, I was very excited when I heard your episode titled The Grave. In it, a woman described an entity in a top hat and Victorian suit that would stand over her bed as a child. Although she described him with a face too dark to see everything else, fit in the description of a man I saw nearly every day from age 8 to when I left home for college at age 18. I've searched for others who've seen him throughout the years. Until now, the closest I could find was the phenomena of the Hat Man. But these descriptions always included a different hat, not a top hat. Although he had a very dark feel, I did not call him the Dark Man. I called him the Piano Man. First time I saw him, I was headed to bed. I remember I was carrying my pink silk pillow that I often brought out into the living room for a while before bed. As I was passing the room at the end of the hall next to mine, I glanced inside. I saw a man in a suit with a top hat sitting at our piano. I'd like to add, it was just a brand new piano with no history of previous owners. He was playing, and as his fingers moved, I saw the keys go down, but no sound came from the piano. I gasped, and he turned around to look at me and grinned. Then he turned back around and continued to play silently. This is when it all began. I started seeing dark silhouettes of humanoid-type creatures with six arms, six legs that would scurry across the floor and up the wall and sometimes even the ceiling. When I'd finally start to fall asleep, I'd feel hands wrapping around my neck, choking me. Unfortunately, my mother would just tell me it was my imagination, so I'd stay up all night with the lights on, sitting in the middle of my bed, terrified every night. I went several months with maybe a couple of hours of sleep a night, which is pretty rough for an elementary kid. I have countless experiences that continue to this day, and it all started after seeing the Piano Man. Sometimes when I was upset and home alone, I'd hear the piano playing as if he was trying to comfort me. He himself never acted in a menacing way, but I never felt like he was anything but evil. But he wanted me to trust him. In junior high, I had a friend who stopped dead in her tracks while we were walking past the piano. She asked, what the hell is that? I asked what she saw, and sure enough, she described the Piano Man. I told her not to worry, he wouldn't hurt her. She was so freaked out, she left and told everyone at school. For a little over a year, everyone was too scared to come over to my house. My mother, who does not believe in the supernatural, has even had an encounter with him. She told me about falling asleep one day at the computer, which was in a room that shared a wall where the piano stood on the other side. She told me she dreamt of a man with the same facial features and hat as the Piano Man. He was very close to her face and screaming at her, but she could not make out what he was saying. This happened after I had moved out. I often wonder what role he played with all the other experiences I've had. Did he act as some sort of hunter who gave out the signal to other beings that I was sensitive and could interact with them? Did he attract them just by his nature? Why did he attach to me so much that I'd see him nearly every day? He followed me to the new home we moved to shortly before I started junior high. Sometimes he even followed me to school. Why didn't he follow me to college? See the same entity the woman from your episode described? I haven't seen him for a very long time, and I hope I never see him again. The Piano Man.
Billy Joel.
Yeah.
What's interesting about this story, and they kind of wrapped up with it, was why didn't this entity, this spirit, this energy, whatever the hell it was, why didn't it follow them further onto college? Why was that some sort of line in the sand where it's like, I've been with you all this time. I've either been tormenting or trying to communicate, but now I'm out. Like, what was that that made it go away?
I think it just, it wanted its piano. And that's
so
where it was
happy. You think the piano was what the attachment was?
I do. I mean, it's interesting that it kind of showed up around the same time. I know they said it was a brand new piano, but I don't know. There's it seemed to kind of be attached to that. And even also where we're talking about the room on the other side of where that piano was, there being activity there. There seemed to be something with that thing. Good now, point. Is it good? Is it bad? I don't know. I mean, it's interesting that they described it as they thought there was, you know, pure evil, but never had any sort of encounter with it that was evil. So, I mean, I guess
I think we naturally think things like that are inadvertent or just inherently evil. Maybe always the case, but listen, if you're seeing a guy sitting at a piano playing with a top hat on, it's going to freak the hell out of you.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. Yeah. I think just kind of depending on your mindset and knowledge of ghosts and all that, you would naturally go to, this is bad, this is scary, just because it is scary, you're going to think it's bad. But I don't know. I mean, it's hard to say. I think sometimes you just got to go with your gut and you can just tell if something is off or somebody is off. And then it's like, okay. And I'd say that that's helped me more times than not in life, where it's like, there's just a weird vibe to someone, and then, you know, shortly thereafter you learn about it or something that they did, and you're like, oh my god, I was totally right.
Yep.
And maybe there's not always the biggest signs there. Here's one. Okay, this I'm curious as to what your opinion is here. So we in Wisconsin, there was a radio guy. This is when I was working in Oshkosh, and I won't say his name, but you can figure it out. His office was right next to me. Always seemed like the friendliest guy in the world. Very kind of like fatherly. Just I got no weird vibes out of him. And there's plenty of radio people I've gotten creepy ass vibes out of, but him, nothing. Had a big billboard up on the highway with headphones on, and you would go over this turn and you'd see him every day. And really kind of a well respected, you know, guy. Turns out, he was involved with trying to solicit, like, it was like a 12 or a 13 year old in like Virginia or something. It was almost Chris Hansen style. It was all a plot. But with that case or that guy, that's where we're talking about sensing things or sensing people. Never felt anything weird about him. And like, what a way to go out.
So this is kind of interesting.
Yeah.
Was one of the reasons why I got into radio, because yeah, I listened to him on the radio growing up. Mm-hmm. And so when I finally met him, this is true.
Okay.
I was freaked out by him. Mm. I got a really creepy feeling from him.
No kidding.
Yeah. I just felt like something. You know how it is when you hear people's voices on radio, you have a picture of what they look like, and he didn't look like that, which you kind of get over. Mm-hmm. But I had worked with him in Green Bay for a while. Mm-hmm. And as the longer I worked with him, the more I thought, he's just, I don't know. There's just something about him. And then I heard the news and was completely disappointed, mm-hmm, because his persona on the air was very conservative and, you know, very Christian and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
This other stuff. So, yeah, I know the guy. And like I said, I was kind of creeped out the first time I met him face to face.
Interesting. It's interesting that you had that reaction and I didn't. I mean, because there's plenty of people where I get the creepy. I don't know. I, when I worked with him, I just never. I don't know. I don't know what it was. I was really.
Did you feel close to him, or did he kind of keep to himself?
He kind of kept to himself, but he was always really friendly. And I just, of all the people to suspect of something like that, he was like the last. What made me upset about the whole thing was the fact that I my judgment on him was so off. And I was like, gosh, that's just, I don't know, to feel like he really was not that type of person at all. It was dumb. But now, interesting the vibes you got there.
Trust no one ever.
basically. 855-853-4802 is our phone number. A Real Ghost Stories online to share your real ghost stories with us. Let's go to another letter. It says, "Hey guys, my family's been plagued by the paranormal for generations. I have plenty of creepy stories. My grandmother was a healer back in her day. Not by choice, but because she said it was a calling. She heard voices that indicated what she should do to heal certain people. It was not dark magic or voodoo. It was through prayer and belief. I believe my sensitivity to feel and see things was passed down from her. I'll write in a story about her another time. When I was about 15 years old, my mom's sister and I lived in a very haunted apartment in New Jersey. We lived there since I was 7, and strange things happened all the time. As one time I was sleeping in my room, I shared with my sister. I was taking my usual afternoon nap, something I did often after school. I was in a deep sleep when I suddenly heard heavy footsteps, as if someone was running back from the house directly towards my room. As I got closer and closer, I woke up in a daze, wondering what in the world it was. The only other person in the house was my mother, who was on the phone while she mopped the floor. I could hear her at a distance. I'd fallen sleeping on my stomach facing the wall, which I don't do anymore ever since this particular day. I didn't move, but I was awake. I continued to hear something running throughout the house. Whoever it was ran right into my room and jumped my bed and right on my back in a straddle position. This person was very heavy, and so heavy I was struggling to breathe. When I tried to move, I realized that I was paralyzed. I became petrified when it suddenly dawned on me that my sister was at a neighbor's house. I then began to open my eyes and peek to the side to see who or what was on me. What I saw, and I can't make this up, was a young girl about 8 years old with very dirty and unevenly cut short hair. She was not wearing a shirt, but instead some type of shorts or underwear. Her skin was dirty as if she had been living outside. She sat there straddling me quietly. I thought an eternity went by because I could not breathe, then looked right at me and smiled. Her teeth were broken down to little nubs and very dirty as well. I then heard my mother walking past my room, mopping the hallway floor and going on talking on our wireless house phone. I tried to yell or scream, but nothing came out. This thing on my back then proceeded to lower her head onto my bare back and opened her mouth as if she was going to bite me. I felt the hot breath on my back and knew that she could bite me, and I still could not move. She did not bite me. Instead, put her mouth against my upper back with a taunting motion that she was going to bite me, but would not. I was so beyond scared because I could not move. Then I started to remember a passage from the Bible that I recently learned by heart. Because of all the weird stuff that was happening in my apartment, my mom suggested I learn it. I got to saying it in my head as I could not speak. This thing immediately retreated. Jumped off onto the floor and with the very same heavy stomps ran back the same way it came in the back entrance. I heard the kitchen door slam. I was unable to move and call for my mom. She said she did not hear a thing, but of course believed me. We lived in that apartment for 17 years and many dark things happened. I'll write you again soon. Thank you for the show. I'm absolutely obsessed with it. It seems like a nice dream to have, or not a dream, but yeah.
We've done a number of podcasts about like scary children with the black eyes and all that kind of stuff. And for some reason, kids, when they are presented in this way, just seem even scarier than like the biggest monster you could ever see in front of you, because you don't think of kids in that way. You think of them as innocent,
yeah,
and loving and all that kind of, and then, you know, you experience something like this and it's crazy. So then the question to me is, was this the energy of a child that maybe had something horrible happen, or was this the energy of something that was portraying this to try and scare her?
I'm thinking it's something that's portraying it to try and scare her. Just probably. With all of the details and all of the kind of extreme things there, it just sounds, you know, to me like, you know, let's check every box of, you know, what are we going to look like to this person? and that's what's coming through. I've had sleep paralysis before, but I've never opened my eyes to look around. Have you ever done that?
I have never had sleep paralysis.
Cool. Consider yourself lucky.
Well, as a child, I was paralyzed just because I was so certain that if somebody broke into the house, I'd be the first one murdered, that I never slept for like years and years of my life. It would be summer back when people didn't have air conditioning in their house, and my room would be locked up tight, no windows open or anything, because I just knew I was the one to be murdered. So I was paralyzed in that way, but never had sleep paralysis like you have.
Wow. And this was a time where did you talk to anybody about that?
Of course not. Because, you know, like we heard a couple of stories ago, you tell your parents stuff like that. Yeah. Like, hey, you're full of crap. You know, they don't believe anything you have to say at that age. Luckily, this last storyteller, you know, her family kind of had a little bit of history with the healing and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. So maybe there was a little bit more belief, but ugh, crazy stuff.
I had a fear as a child that was, you know, an unrealistic one, but, you know, somewhat founded in what was going on at the time in our community, that my mom was going to get killed at work. And she was working at Penny's at the time. And it was right around the time that Lori Deppis disappeared.
See, you told me that story just recently. I had no idea that you were going through that. No idea.
Yeah, I was little. I mean, it was around, you know, so I was like 8 or 9, I think, somewhere around there. But that was an unfounded, you know, but it was like, but I talked about it, but it was always like, oh, you know, you worry too much. And that's just, you know, that's what you're met with back then. But it was an interesting time. There was a lot of I don't know. Is it just me your fear of the murderer thing? There was an atmosphere around there where there was some dark shit going on, right? I mean,
I think there was, you know, I think that, there was. And I think it was because we weren't cautious enough back then.
Yeah.
Like now maybe we were overly cautious because, you know, we never let our kids play outside because something could happen. And trust me, if I were a parent, if I had a kid, if Harper were my daughter, I would be way overprotective because I'd be afraid of what could happen. But I think back then we were just like, go across the road to the neighbors, you know, go down the street and play with the Simpsons or whatever the hell you're going to go to. I just think that we were just a little bit more naive to what really goes on out there.
Yeah. And then it was all kind of a shock when it was all reported on the way that it was. Yeah. Yeah, it was an interesting atmosphere. 855-853-4802 is our phone number. Let's go to a caller. Hi.
My name is Susan. I'm calling because I have a ghost story that I thought you may be interested in. I used to live in Idaho, and Idaho has, you know, several ghost towns. One of them happens to be called Silver City, an old mining town that's over 100 years old. And people are still live there. The buildings still exist as the way they are. In fact, it's against the law. If you buy one of the buildings there, it's against the law for you to take it down and rebuild. You have to keep it the way it is. It's because they want to leave it the way it was, but people actually live here. Not too many, but they do. I was staying in a hotel there. I think it was called the Idaho Hotel. In fact, one of the rooms I was in was known to be haunted. Even though I didn't feel anything, in the hotel, in the room that I was staying at, had bullet holes in the walls that were over 100 years old. So it was kind of crazy. But I did have a ghost experience. My son, who was probably around 2 years old at the time, and my ex, we went looking around at this mining town. I think it's in the Owowee, or I can't pronounce it, mountains in Idaho. We went looking around, you know, we left the town and started looking around the mountain and everything to look at caves and all that. and other historical things. And we happened to come across one mining cave. And we went into the mining cave, and my ex started taking photographs, and I was holding our son at the time. But I had a really nervous feeling that I shouldn't be in the cave with my son. And so I did an about face and left. I just felt like there's danger here. I don't know, I didn't see anything. I just felt like something was dangerous in here. But he obviously didn't, because he continued to explore and take pictures and all that. But once we did that and we went back to the hotel for the night, we looked at the pictures and we saw a face of a spirit. It looked like an old miner. What's interesting is the photos, but photos went from looking like a regular photo, and then it started to change colors. Every photo after, it went from a clear photo, then it started to get blue and bluer, and then next thing you know, then this miner's face shows up clear as day, looking right at my ex, and the face looks extremely angry, like, get the, you know what, out of my mind right now. And it's so crystal clear, you can tell it is. And then after you see the face, then the pictures afterwards start slowly going back from blue to back to a normal looking, what a picture should look like. I have these photos. If you're interested in them, I can get them and send them to you. And you'll see the angry miner face. Well, anyway, when we were sitting down at the hotel that evening and speaking to people who live there, and we explained to one guy what we saw and what we caught on film, and we showed it to him, he goes, do you know that that's the mine that you were in? He goes, I've been to that mine. I have pictures of ghosts from that mine. Do you know that the mine that you were in was not only haunted, but it's haunted because 33 miners happened to have died in that mine that you were in. It collapsed over 100 years ago, and it is haunted. And he had pictures to show us, to prove to us that it was truly haunted, and it wasn't our imagination. So I thought it was really interesting. It's a great place. It's worth the trip. But that's my story, and I hope you like it. Take care. Bye.
You know, I'm not like a claustrophobic person, but mines, and I think we got to kind of like really crawl between rock formations in any way, shape, or form. Just not my cup of tea.
Yeah, caves and stuff like that. You know, I've been to a couple in my life, and those are not my favorite thing. You're talking about mining towns, and obviously back then, the Wild West, and a freaking hard life, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And there's no surprise that there's going to be hauntings. When I hear stories like this, the first thing I think of is, as life becomes easier for us, as we sit on our ass more and everything's kind of done for us in life, do we leave less energy behind? Will there be less hauntings in the future? Here's a miner who's haunting people. He's like, hey, you give me back my mind. Are we going to be sitting there going, you know, talking about playing video games and stuff like that? What is going to make us so angst driven and angry and sad and that we're going to haunt in the future? Is it going to be less haunting?
It'll be a lot of residual shit where it's like people get so emotionally wrapped up in things like social media. So there'll be these apparitions and images of people just sitting there staring at their phones. And like, oh my God, there's that thing again, staring at that.
And selfies and selfies.
Exactly.
That's what it's going to be. Our hauntings for our generations are going to suck. We have no power to do the good stuff.
It's going to be the most vain hauntings ever. Also, I saw a big flash. Yeah, it was somebody taking a fucking selfie again and again and again. Yeah, it's, I don't know. You got a good point there. I mean, there is that. There's so much different types of energy that are expelled. But those were hard times. That was a hard life, so much more than what most live today. So
yeah, and you hear about old families, you know, way back in the 1800s and stuff, or 1700s, and they've got family members that pass away from sickness. We just don't have that kind of turmoil in our lives anymore. So I wonder how that will change the way people perceive us in the future, as far as hauntings and spirit and energies and stuff like that.
I know, it's an interesting thing to think about. Yeah, I've never thought about it that way, but I think you got a good point. I think it's going to make an impact in some way, shape, or form. And it'll be interesting, too, just seeing how things have been documented the way that they have been for the last, you know, 20, 30, 40 years in terms of, you know, paranormal activity. And it's just kind of continuous documentation that gets, you know, more in depth all the time. Right. When there is a larger body of work to look at, you know, for a long, you know, 100 years or 200. I mean, there is that to an extent today, but it's nowhere near, I think, the amount of data that's going to exist over all that time. Unfortunately, right. We'll be dead and we won't get to know what the hell that is. So
that's where my angst, that's what will make me angry enough to haunt, because I'm not still around to be able to do that stuff.
Just come back and like, oh, okay. And I want to see this too. And I want to figure that out. Yeah, I think it'd be fun. All right, that's going to wrap up today's episode of Real Ghost Stories Online. If you like the show, keep us on the air. Become an extra podcast person. Sign up at ghostpodcast.com or patreon.com/realghoststories. Get access to all the bonus episodes, advanced episodes, and more. Ghostpodcast.com or patreon.com/realghoststories. Until next time, for Todd, I'm Tony. Thanks for listening to Real Ghost Stories Online.